the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I've been exploring with the idea online of presenting the text of the sermon, preceded by what I think in the trade they call a taster, or a teaser. And here it is this morning. It seems to me that the future of the church in our own century lies in a return to Christian communities defined by vision movements, putting core spiritual values into concrete practice. I am the vine, you are the branches, said Jesus. And there's an old African saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And in these weeks following Easter, we have reopened again for in-person worship alongside our continued live stream. And we are experiencing the joy of moving tentatively yet assuredly forward together, moving into a time when everything is no longer defined solely by the pandemic. And despite our in-person worship still having some restrictions, most notable of which is we cannot yet sing, everyone who has experienced this return says how good it is to be back. The experience of the pandemic restrictions has paradoxically expanded our sense of virtual connection. This alone, however, will not be enough. We must rise to the challenge to give the account of why we exist. And in a world increasingly moving away from an affiliation with institutional church, this is the most important question for us to address and will determine the nature of our future. As more and more of us return to in-person presence and worship, our live stream worship becomes an additional long-range arrow in our quiver. Virtual worship enables participation from those among us who, for reasons of age or infirmity, temporary sickness, or for some other reason, cannot physically be present on Sunday morning. What it is not is a permission to stay away from in-person worship. Because our live stream is an outreach channel, connecting us with the spiritually curious, whose curiosity about faith might be encouraged through their exposure to our online worship. Those who might one day risk the countercultural action of walking through our red doors on a Sunday morning. The church's institutional decline in our time cannot be argued with. And it mirrors a disaffection right across our institutions in the Western world. Gen X's and millennials and Gen Z's, raised in a time when many of our hallowed institutions have increasingly failed to deliver on their promises, or do not have the automatic loyalty of previous generations, most of whom I see sitting in front of me this morning. This is compelling us all to the question beyond our experience of church as an institution. If no longer as an institution, how might Christian communities redefine themselves going into a different future? Jesus focused not on religion. He certainly had little interest in forming a new religion with an institutional product. Jesus projected his experience of being in relationship with God. And he projected that into his relationship with his followers. And by extension, he taught them how to make connection with him and God through the quality of relationships with one another. In the first letter of John, which was the New Testament lesson which we didn't hear this morning, the writer says, "No one has seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is perfected in us." This is also echoed in the gospel passage from John, the great commandment, "Love one another as I have loved you." And by this will the world know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. And his teaching points to the way of life that seems simple enough. Well, maybe not simple enough, but at least clear enough. Elsewhere, Jesus paints word pictures of what relationship with God looks like through the use of arresting metaphors that draw their power from being taken from everyday familiar life. Last week's gospel portion from John 10, we explored the metaphor of the good shepherd, whose love for the flock has a very intimate and self-sacrificing intensity. In today's gospel from John 15, we hear about the vine and its branches. For the gardeners amongst us, this is a metaphor that speaks of the organic life of our relationships in community. And it seems to me that the future of the church in our own century lies in a return to Christian communities defined as vision movements, putting core values into concrete practice. And this will require letting go of our investment in church as an institution. I don't mean that we should abandon the institution. It is still much loved by many of us. But to allow the nature of our identity and sense of purpose shift and not fight against institutional decline. Shift with the drift of decline and not fight against it. In other words, to take advantage of what's going on around us in society, to be freed and renewed by the presence of the risen Christ in the world. Such a shift in orientation will go to the heart of our evangelism. Is our evangelism aimed at shoring up the flagging membership of the institution, or is our evangelism focused on winning hearts and changing lives? Do we want to revive our flagging, enculturated institution, or will we take a new opportunity to put into practice Christ's countercultural message of love, and in the words of St. Paul, to give a good account of the faith that is within us? Leonard Cohen sang, "There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." And through the cracks in the institution of the church, a new vision movement emerges, inevitably setting in motion the cycle from movement to institution to decline in motion once again. Now, historically, we find ourselves in the scary but potentially exciting phase of the institution's decline. And as we contemplate the overall cycle of larger decline in our society, at local levels we continue to celebrate the signs of vitality that nevertheless persist in our community. For instance, we're moving to celebrate the success of our recent capital campaign. For some, this is a sign of the revival of the institutional St. Martin's that we all so fondly remember. But for most of us, we're not so sure. We grope our way forward, somehow sensing that our recent campaign success must be used not to go back to the past, but as a transition, equipping us for a different kind of future, the contours of which have yet fully to become revealed. Now, at the moment, I'm a member of a small parish working party that is currently participating in a 5-week stewardship seminar series involving a wide range of attendees from across the Episcopal Church. And the first question that we have been asked to address is, why do we exist? Simon Sinek, in a video called Getting to the Why, addresses the question. Why, he asks, is Apple so innovative? Year after year, they have proved themselves more innovative than the competition. Yet, like their competitors, they are just a computer company, operating in the same business climate and conditions as every other computer company. Sinek, drawing 3 concentric lines on a board, wrote why in the center. And in the next concentric line, he wrote how. And in the outermost concentric line, he wrote what. He noted that every single person in an organization will know what the organization does. Some will even know how it does it. But he claims that very few will know why the organization does what it does. And by why, Sinek is not referring Sinek is referring to purpose, not product. What is the cause or belief that explains not only why an organization exists, but the paramount question? Why should anyone else care? Most organizations begin at the outside of the circles and move inwards. They will tell us what they do and maybe even how they do it. But they are silent on why they do it. Making a profit is not a why. It's a product. It's a goal. It's an end result. And in contrast, innovative and inspired organizations move from the center out. They tell us first and foremost why they exist before moving to what they do and how they do it. And sticking with Apple, he gives an example. And I want Ian to just play a short clip of what he says at this point in his presentation.
Let me give you an example. I use Apple because it's easy to understand and everybody gets it. If Apple were like everyone else, a marketing message from them might sound like this. We make great computers. They're beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. Want to buy one? Meh. And that's how most of us communicate. That's how most marketing is done, that's how most sales is done, and that's how most of us communicate as a person. We say what we do, we say how we did it, or how we better, we expect some sort of behavior or purchase or vote, something like that. Here's our new law firm, the best lawyers, the biggest clients, and we always perform for our clients. Here's our new car, it looks like a gas mileage it has. you know, leather seats by our car. That's uninspiring. Here's how Apple actually communicates. Everything we do, we believe in challenging the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. The way we challenge the status quo is by making our products beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. We just happen to make it with computers. What do I? Totally different, right? You really buy a computer from me. All I did was reverse the order of the information. What proves to us is that people don't buy what you do, people buy why you do it. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. This explains why every single person in this room is perfectly comfortable buying a computer from Apple. But we're also perfectly comfortable buying an MP3 player from Apple, or a phone from Apple, or a DVR from Apple. But as I said before, Apple's just a computer company. There's nothing that distinguishes them structurally from any of their competitors. Their competitors are all equally qualified to make all these products.
Not easy to pick up a lot of that, but what he says is Apple tells us why they exist. We believe in everything we do is a challenge to the status quo. We make computers that are easy to use. We make great computers. Want to buy one? So, taking Sinek's example, I want to present to you two possibilities here. The first is, we have a beautiful church and an active community. We marry progressive theology with traditional worship. We have fun and we do good. Want to join us? Compare. Everything we do strives to give an account of the faith within us to become better equipped for the purpose God has for us. We are a community on a journey together in the belief that if you want to go fast, journey alone. If you want to go far, journey together. And we are greatly strengthened by your presence with us. Will you join us? Jesus said, I am the vine, my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes and makes it bear more fruit. I am the vine. You are the branches. Because apart from me, you can do nothing.